A lot of good games again to boot this week, and we're going to start off with some SEC spotlight, some good matchups, and I'm going to let Alex take it away from there.
First game we're going to talk about this week is the number 8 Alabama Crimson Tide taking on number 14 Missouri. Last year's game was supposed to be pretty competitive. Same type of matchup last year where Missouri was highly ranked, but Drew Pine was a starting quarterback for the Tigers, and they stood no chance, losing 34-0 in an absolute thumping at Bryant-Denny Stadium. This year, pretty different story. Missouri has a lot of weapons, including their quarterback, Bro Pripula. He's healthy, playing good football, a lot better than Drew Pine ever would for Missouri. And they have the best running back in the nation in Ahmad Hardy, who's leading the country in rushing yards and looks absolutely dominant going against the Alabama team that has struggled to stop the run all year long. But last week against Vanderbilt, thought was their best performance stopping the run outside of that first quarter, which was a little bit of an issue for the Crimson Tide. But after they got out of that quarter, allowed less than 30 rushing yards the rest of the game. KJ, you look at this matchup, last year wasn't competitive at all. Do you think this game's any different than what we saw last year?
I think it'll be a little different in terms of the lopsidedness. However, I do agree with you on your assessment of Alabama's defense. I thought they were a lot better this past weekend. You really, for the first time, started to see linebackers where they were supposed to be, plugging the lanes, taking the holes that the defense give them up front, and wrapping up. And you talk about wrapping up, it's, you know, it can get cliche, but it's one of those fundamental things, Alex. You can't get away from it. I mean, just ask Auburn. you know, if you don't wrap up, bad things happen. But if you wrap up, even if the guy that you're trying to tackle is stronger than you and your other teammates are in the right positions, you're going to get that assisted tackle and team swarming defense. And that's how you win games. And that's what Alabama did last week against Vanderbilt. And quite honestly, Missouri has a decent offensive line, probably a little bit better than Vanderbilt's. I do think Alabama, for the first time this year, will probably crank up blitzes at a little more excessive rate. I think that's necessary here. You're playing a really hot quarterback with some weapons. You alluded to that. And you're going into opposing territory. And you can't take any game for granted, especially on the road. So I think you'll see a focused Alabama team. I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I do like where the offense is at and the defense's improvement. So I'm going to take the Tide in a close one.
Look at Missouri, the 109th strength of schedule in the country. That's out of 136 teams in the FBS and the lowest in the SEC when it comes to strength of schedule. And I can read you off all the stats Missouri has when it comes to ranking offensively and defensively. But who have they played? They played South Carolina. That was a close game, only a 9-point victory for them. And they played Kansas, who it took to the fourth quarter in a big run from Jamal Roberts to separate themselves in that game. Those are the two most difficult opponents they played, and they were down to the wire with them. The rest of their schedule, they're playing cupcakes. So I'm not sitting here what Missouri actually is. I know Ahmad Hardy's a great running back, but what is the rest of this team? Is the defense actually one of the best defenses in the country, or is it just benefiting from playing terrible offenses like South Carolina and UMass and so on and so forth?
Then because of that, I think you'll see Alabama maybe start a little slow, quarter and a half, but I do think they rally and win in the second half, maybe 10, 14 point spread.
Then look at Alabama. They've been tested. They went between the hedges at Georgia. Yep. They played Vanderbilt last week, and they grew in those games. I talked about it, the 113 rushing yards they gave up in the first quarter against Vanderbilt. I was at that game and watching those rushing yards be given up, that big run Cedric Alexander had to open the game. I was like, oh my gosh, it's happening again. We can't stop the run. Repeat of last year. But Cain Womack and that defense really clamped down on the run game and did a great job in that second, third, and fourth quarter, especially in the red zone, forcing turnovers with Diego Pavia. The turnover that Justin Jefferson forced in the red zone in that second quarter, forcing that fumble on Diego Pavia, changed the game, prevented them from going up 14-0 and what would have been a repeat of last year with them going up two scores early in the first half. Alabama has answered the bell when it comes to stopping the run in last game in that second half, and I do think they do it here, stopping Ahmad Hardy. Because if you take out Ahmad Hardy, I'm not a true believer in what they have at the wide receiver position. There's no Luther Burden there anymore. There's no Theo Weiss Jr. And Bo Pribula, while he's good, I don't think he's Brady Cook good with what he had last year. Next up on the slate, KJ, is number 8 Oklahoma taking on the unranked Texas in a neutral site Cotton Bowl. Who do you think wins this game, KJ? Because Texas has looked pretty bad all year. Last week against Florida, the defense, which has been their saving grace all year long, struggled immensely. Arch Manning continues to struggle turning over the football through two interceptions in the fourth quarter, effectively icing that game for Texas. In Oklahoma, John Mateer struggling with that hand wrist injury, depending on Michael Hawkins, who actually played in this game last year, one of the games he started in place of Jackson Arnold. And he played semi-decently. He finished 19 of 30, 148 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, and was held to 20 carries for 27 yards. Do you think Texas, even though they're struggling this season, gets the best of Oklahoma, regardless of if Mateer or Hawkins plays, or is Oklahoma just too much for them?
I think Oklahoma is really too much for Texas overall. I think the morale of this team alone, like I think these guys know the importance of winning as many games as you can as a non-SEC team making pushes for the playoff, because let's be honest, the SEC overall league-wide is the best brand of ball. There's no drop-off from 4 to 8 and 9 in the league, right? Not much of one anyway. So other conferences don't have that. So when you start talking about playoff contention, that becomes a factor because, yeah, you have wins and losses, but as you kind of alluded to in the last set, who have you really played? So that's what these guys need. They need to play somebody of good caliber. And though Texas has struggled at times, Texas is still a very talented football team, especially on defense. And I thought that would maybe propel them in the fourth quarter. I took Florida as an upset alert pick last week. I wasn't convinced that they would win. I did pick them to win for the purpose of that segment, but I liked their chances against Texas' struggling offense. They made just enough plays to win. And to be honest with you, up front, the offensive line whipped around Texas. And I think for me, that was the biggest, like, wow moment for a, if you're a Texas fan, is like, this is not what we do. And you're coming into a team's territory. Granted, it's their home field, but an up and down Florida team nonetheless, and you're getting smoked like that up front. That's not a good sign going to this Oklahoma game that means a lot for both schools for the trajectory of their season. Really understands the purpose of this game and why it's so important to get the job done. And therefore, I think Oklahoma does enough on offense and has a good defensive day against a struggling Longhorns passing football team. Man, Arch Manning, yeah, it's giving bust.
If you thought Texas struggled against Florida's defense, which I'll give them their flowers, they played really good against Texas last week. Oklahoma's defense is a million times better. Looking where they rank in the college football and their defensive rankings, total defense, they're first. Opponent yards per play, they're first. Sacks per game, they're first. Tackles for loss per game, they're first. Third down conversion percentage, they're first. Scoring defense, they're second. Passing defense, they're second. Touchdowns allowed, they're second. Passing touchdowns allowed, they're second. Opponent plays of 10-plus yards, they're second. And I can go on and on and on. They're top five in almost every important defensive stat category, and you're playing a Texas offense that couldn't score if they wanted to. Arch Manning, it's giving bust, like you said, KJ. I didn't buy into the hype going into the season. We crowned him this prince of college football because his last name is Manning without watching him play a down of the sport, really really meaningful football. I know he played some downs last year and sparingly with Quinn Ewers dealing with injuries and whatnot, but he didn't play a meaningful down of that season. And I look at it as a recruit, played in the lowest tier of Louisiana high school football, and it shows. He's out of control, throwing passes he doesn't need to, missing wide open receivers, missing layups up and down the field. And part of that's his fault, but it's also the offensive line. If you watched last week especially, the offensive line struggled to block, and Jordan Rogers talked about it in the game he was covering for Mississippi State when the offensive line for Blake Chapin couldn't block anything. When you're a quarterback and you're not trusting your protection, you don't look at the guy running the streak route down the field. Your eyes come down, and you're looking for the drag routes and the easy routes and the checkdowns because you're not trusting that my right tackle is going to hold up against player A or my center is going to hold up to this dominant defensive tackle that's averaging a tackle for loss per game. Your eyes come down because you're anticipating that pressure coming towards you. So Steve Sarkisian has to figure it out to give Arch confidence, not only throwing the ball down the field, but confidence in his offensive line to hold up against protections. And going against Oklahoma, I don't know if it's going to get any better for Arch Manning, because like I just said, their defense is one of the best, if not the best in the country, and he has struggled all year long with easy stuff, and it's going to get way more difficult this weekend. I think it'll be a fight just like any rivalry game is. You can throw the record books out the window. You can throw the stats, the players, what they've done all season long out the window. This is going to be a bloody battle. It's just like Alabama-Auburn, where you can throw everything out the window. They're not going to care. It's going to be a difficult game for both teams, but I'm taking Oklahoma to get the win here and continue to dominate Texas in this matchup. Next up, KJ, we have your Auburn Tigers taking on the number 10 Georgia Bulldogs back at Jordan-Hare. Some issues in the previous game against Texas A&M for Auburn, and really the last two games with A&M and Oklahoma, we talked about it last week with sacks and your left tackle having hearing issues. Hugh Freeze talked about it this week, discovering that was Xavier Chaplin. But it's at Jordan-Hare, and it's a rivalry game. And like I just said, though, you can throw the records out the window, what's happened this season out the window. They're going to go out there and battle. Is Auburn going to be able to handle what Georgia's going to throw at them?
I think so for the most part, and I have said this before the season, and half of it's already happened. I did not expect to win the Oklahoma game. I thought that it would be a close game, but I never thought that we were going to win. You can go back on the show, and I picked Oklahoma to win because they were a better football team by just a little bit. However, I said Oklahoma was a less winnable game for us than Georgia. And what I mean by that, I'll double down on what I said last time out, is that Georgia is a very good football team. They have played now a few good teams, being Tennessee and, of course, the Tide last week. And Alabama really, I think, exposed some things in them in the first half. And I'm not saying that right now Alabama's exposing everyone's defensive front, and that pains me to say, but that's just the offensive line has majorly been a huge improvement. Got to give Kalen DeBoer's staff credit for that. But going back to Auburn, the offensive line for Auburn has been downright bad, and Georgia's defensive line has been downright bad at times. So you have this you-don't-know-what's-going-to-happen moment. They can get after the passer at times, but the linebackers and safeties, not the best. Kirby Smart, open field tacklers. You're notorious for the guys making plays for Kirby's back seven. It's missed at times this year. Some receiving corps have gotten the best of Georgia's secondary play, some freshmen back there. And I just have believed that this was a game Auburn would get up for. The added dimension of Cam Newton being honored. He's going to be in the house, and you can say what you want, but anytime you have arguably the best player of the century for your school, and definitely the decade, you know, anytime you have that, you're going to want to be psyched up as a player. I mean, that's Cam Newton, and you're honoring what he did. This Auburn offense, when they have protected, they have ran the ball. When Hugh Freeze has called run plays. The two big things for this football game are Hugh Freeze, you've got to trust your running backs. There's even if it's screen passes, they can't go eight touches for a game. That's pathetic. You recruit running backs because you're a running team. You're at a home game against your rival, one of your two main ones, and this is a game that Hugh Freeze hasn't won yet. You've got to light a fire under yourself and say, what have I not done in this past matchup, and what have I not done this year to come up short? And that's use running backs and have an offensive line that can consistently protect and a quarterback that can throw it away when they're not. And that is my only criticism of Jackson Arnold. He hasn't thrown an interception yet. It's come close once. But my criticism is that he holds on to that football. Man, if it's not there, throw it away. Stop locking in on that deep downfield threat. Don't be a big play quarterback. Take what's in front of you. I don't mind giving him 25, 30 passes a game, but you better throw some of those to the running backs. The receivers are going to get the attention. Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, these guys are getting attention because that's who we're using. You've got to counteract that and hit them with what we're not using the last few games. And that's been, up until that point, the best part of your football football team. What Auburn's known for is running the ball. I think Auburn runs the ball enough this week. I think Hugh Freeze learned from his mistakes. I really hope he did. Trust Jeremiah Cobb. Trust Amari Alston on those third and two, third and threes, and let the offensive line run block. It's much easier. I like Auburn to stay in this game until the fourth quarter. I do think Georgia maybe has a little too much for us, so I'm going to take Georgia, but I'm not buying the Tigers blowout this weekend. I just don't see it happening, Alex. I think these guys are going to be ready to play and play hard.
The concern for Hugh Freeze and Auburn is when you get into the situation where you have to run the football or you need to keep the defense honest, are they going to do that? I saw it in the Alabama game where Alabama, there were times where they were getting maybe 1, 2, 3 yards a carry. But Ryan Grubb said, well, we're struggling a little bit in the run game, but we got to continue to run the football. Because if you just continually throw the ball, throw a screen pass, throw a slant pattern, throw a deep ball, what's the defense going to do? They're going to pin their ears back because they know, well, this formation, not running the football, they're just going to throw it. They haven't been able to run the football against us, and they've abandoned it. And Hugh Freeze has done that the last 2 weeks against Oklahoma and Texas A&M, where they've struggled to run the football or completely ignored it out of I have no clue why. And against Georgia, they're gonna try to stop the run game. And Hugh Freeze has to maintain the ability to run the football and say, well, we only got 2 yards there. Let's not abandon it. Let's run the ball. Continue to do that. What was your success against Baylor? What'd you do? Run the football. You ran it down their throat. And I get it. Baylor's a different team than Georgia. Georgia's a lot more talented defensively. But your success this season has been running the football. It's not dropping back and throwing 40, 50 yeah. passes a game with Jackson Arnold. Jackson Arnold has shown flashes. He has the talent. But he's not 40, 50 passes per game talented.
No.
You have to get Eric Singleton involved outside of a jet sweep or a bubble screen.
Yes.
Throw a pass over the middle. Get him going somewhere. Throw a deep bomb to him. Something. Get him involved. It can't just be Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton on a jet sweep, Eric Singleton on a bubble screen, Malcolm Simmons once in a while.
And you start playing back into that predictability, and that's what we talk about when we talk about bad coaching from Hugh Freeze and on this show, whoever's calling the plays. Have deliberate play calling for one, but for two, change things up. Like if you have the same run pass or pass run pattern every single time, and I can call it from the couch, those big guys chasing your quarterback up front are going to be able to predict it too. And here's the thing with Cam Coleman. Cam has insane talent. I honestly think if Cam was in a system that got him 10 to 12 touches per game, he could be a Heisman candidate. I think his ceiling is that high. I think he can high point the footballs. I think he can block in the run game. He's a great talent, probably the best receiver Auburn's had since Sammy Coates. And Sammy would drop the easy ones, which Cam did in his first season at first. Here's the thing with Cam. You're not trying to disguise him. Even if you don't throw the ball to him 20 times a game, even if he's coming out there and faking that he's catching a screen pass and going to block, you're using your best card in multiple ways. When you're playing poker, Alex, do you hold the cards up for your opponent to see?
No,
because your cards are your weapons. You hide your weapons. Hide your weapons.
Yeah.
And utilize your weapons that aren't as good as your best guys, if that makes sense. Hugh Freeze, that's simple, simple football. Get everybody involved. Help Jackson Arnold. Get him in third and short. Trust the running backs. You'll be in the game.
And the benefit for Auburn in this game is Georgia has relied heavily on their rushing attack with Chauncey Bowens and Nate Frazier and even using Gunnar Stockton's legs at times. And when Gunnar Stockton, they have had to rely on him to throw the football, outside of the Tennessee game, which I thought he played probably his best game of his career, against Alabama and against Kentucky, he was missing some easy stuff. And the Georgia coaches talked about him not wanting to force it into spots and try to take that, kind of like Jackson Arnold is. Jackson Arnold's not wanting to force it into places or try to get it to that receiver. He's only throwing to open receivers. He's not trying to throw open receivers, because he's worried about turning the ball over. It's been beaten to his brain constantly. So you have two quarterbacks that have unwillingness to test the defense. That could benefit Auburn with their rush defense, which is one of the best in the country in the SEC. If they're able to stifle Georgia's running attack, I don't have the confidence that Gunnar Stockton's going to be able to go into Jordan-Hare and beat Auburn by himself. That would be the key for Auburn to beat Georgia. I just think Georgia's too much right now, but I would not be surprised if Georgia's held to under 100 rushing yards that Auburn comes out with a victory.
Get him to turn the ball over a few times. That's the best way to try to get into the game early.
That wraps up our spotlight, SEC spotlight. KJ, before we get into the rest of the slate and making our blitz picks, let's talk about teams that are on upset alert this weekend. What team do you have on upset alert in SEC?
I just talked about them. You know, I've picked against Auburn the last few weeks, and they've lost both games. I picked Auburn to win last week. They did not win, but I thought it would be close. I picked us to lose against Oklahoma. This honestly is a game that Auburn, when we're in Auburn, always gets up for. The defense coming off of two really good weeks where they were the only reason we were even remotely close. They're riding high right now. When you have a defense riding high, they're looking around each other and probably being brutally honest, like, listen, guys, we don't know what that other side's going to do. We got to be prepared for anything here. Let's go out and be aggressive, you know. Let's go try to, you know, lodge the ball loose on some slants. Let's go make sure we're getting two people around every ball carrier, three people around every ball carrier, see what happens in coverage, be aggressive in blitz schemes. And DJ Durkin has done a really good job of picking his spots to say, no, we're doing this, and also trusting some of those defensive leaders like Keldrick Falk, as well as Kieron Crawford, who I think has been the breakout star of this year, as well as Xavier Atkins. I think if those three guys can have a good game on defense and keep Gunnar Stockton in check, and on offense, our offensive line can hold up and we use our running backs to our advantage, I think we have enough to potentially do the job. Don't know that it'll happen, but that's my pick for the week. I'm trying to speak it into existence.
I have LSU number 11, LSU on upset alert this week, playing South Carolina. Granted, it is in Death Valley at night, difficult time and place to play at if you're any team in the country, much less South Carolina. But it's similar to Florida and Texas last week, where it's two offenses that are awful. South Carolina and LSU rank in the bottom of the SEC in numerous offensive stat categories. South Carolina's last in the SEC in yards per game, third worst in the SEC in points per game. They're last in the SEC in rushing yards. But right behind them is LSU, who's second to last. Neither of these teams can apparently run the football. LSU's quarterback Garrett Nussmeier is dealing with that oblique injury. Hasn't looked great all year long. Continues to struggle throwing the deep ball. Was 1-for-7 throwing the deep pass against LSU. The rushing attack, like I said, abysmal all year long for the Tigers. South Carolina, they figured out some things in their last game. Ended up beating that team pretty bad, but their offense still did struggle. It was a lot of defense for them. It's two defenses in LSU and South Carolina that are great. And you could say LSU's even elite with the way they've played and won them football games. This is the game where I think South Carolina's offense might figure itself out a little bit, lean on the Norris Sellers, get players outside of Nick Harbor involved in the receiving game. You've done that in past weeks with Ventravius Jacobs getting a 100-yard receiving game. But you also got to get your running game going. It's not like LSU, where I have no trust in them to get the running game going because it's been 2 years and it's the same issue over and over again. Where South Carolina, they've been able to run the football. They have a healthy quarterback in Lenore Sellers who can use his legs. They have a running back in Faison who was a 1,000-yard rusher last year. Even though it was at Utah State, he was still a 1,000-yard rusher. He has the ability in him. Oscar Attaway, the backup running back, has shown flashes at times. I truly believe South Carolina can go into Death Valley and win this game due to some injuries that LSU is dealing with right now. But I still think it's going to be a tall task for them to go into that hostile environment and win. If it was in South Carolina, I would have this game gone in a way for South Carolina to win it. But with it being Death Valley at night, it's a tall task for them to be able to beat LSU. But I wouldn't be surprised if it happens. Next, KJ, the blitz picks going over the rest of the games in the SEC this week. Washington State taking on number 4 Ole Miss. Do you think Washington State is even close with Ole Miss this weekend?
No, there's no chance. Ole Miss might hang 70.
I'm with you. Ole Miss, Trinidad Chambliss has really turned that offense on its head, made it a lot better than what it was under Austin Simmons. Next up, Arkansas taking on number 12 Tennessee. This was the game last year where Arkansas ended up beating Tennessee 19-14, and it was the infamous time where Nico, I'm a leave of the program, walked out of bounds on the final play of the game instead of heaving it to the end zone. do you think Arkansas is able to pull off the upset again with Bobby Petrino leading the team?
I think it's going to be another competitive game. I think Arkansas has been in a lot of games this year, and they've lost a lot of close games, and they're going to be fired up trying to get over that hump. But I just don't think they're going to make enough plays against Tennessee. Tennessee has looked really, really good at times, only one blemish on the schedule, and they controlled some parts of that game against the Bulldogs. This is a game that I think Tennessee will do very well in the second half. You might see a slow first half, but I think Tennessee, with Joey Aguilar and those weapons, get it going. I think Tennessee wins it in the second half against the Hogs.
That's a situation where you're playing at Neyland Stadium, Tennessee's home field. If it was Arkansas, I'd give Arkansas a fighting chance. I don't think Arkansas, with their new old head coach and Bobby Petrino, is going to be able to go in Neyland Stadium and put up a fight. Next up, the Florida Gators, coming off their upset over Texas last week, stays in Texas and takes on the Texas A&M Aggies. Do you think they're able to beat another Texas team, KJ, or is Florida, was that a fluke last week?
It wasn't a fluke. They have enough defensive talent, and honestly, they have a freshman phenom that we'll talk more about later, that in Dallas Wilson, that's an absolute stud, and me and you were talking about it this weekend, and I used the words, he just moves like a pro, and he's got the build of a running back that's 6'2" and bruiser, but he's a 6-foot receiver. And you don't see receivers that are that stature put their head down like he does. And then he has the moves too. He's a complete package. He blocks as well. Lagway's been up and down at quarterback, and the offensive line has had some up and down moments. That's really the only thing that's held Florida back, and the turnovers. I mean, otherwise they move the football at will at times against their opponents this year. And defensively, they've been pretty solid since week two. They're not allowing much at all over the top, and they're pretty much staying in their rushing lanes now. Everything, for the most part, hemmed in, a few big plays here and there. But I think this is another game that the Gators can actually stay close in. I don't think they're going to come away with the on-the-road win at Kyle Field, home of the 12th man. I think the Aggies in that rushing attack maybe just wear them out a little bit in the fourth quarter. I think Texas A&M wins, but don't be surprised to see the Gators keep this one close again.
After struggling to start the season, A&M's defense has turned it on the last two games against Auburn and Mississippi State. I was expecting it to be a shootout last week against the Bulldogs. It wasn't that way because A&M's defense played so well. They have allowed just one conversion out of 23 third down attempts. That's outstanding. And Florida, they've had their moments where they showed flashes, like last week against Texas, but they also have what I would call their valleys, where it's real, real low.
Yep.
Going into Kyle Field, While they played great last week, I don't think they're going to be able to carry that momentum into a hostile environment in Kyle Field and beat the Aggies. I think the Aggies are too much for them in this game. And the last game of the weekend for the SEC, South Carolina taking on number 11 LSU. Do you think South Carolina is able to pull off this upset, KJ?
I don't think they have enough. I know you were drinking the South Carolina Kool-Aid for this week, but I can't drink it yet. I'm just not a believer enough in what Arkansas can do on offense. And Death Valley is just a tough place to win in the fourth quarter. And I think it is going to be a close type of affair in the fourth quarter. As you said, I think it's going to be two offenses trying to fight to see who can score the least amount of points. Hey, no, you're supposed to score. No, oh, wait, what's the end zone? I forgot where to go. I think these offenses have been really bad at times, but I think it's a pretty good game this weekend between them until the fourth quarter, and LSU is going to take it away. It's just too much in Death Valley.
South Carolina can pull it off. It's just playing at Death Valley at night and LSU's elite-level defense. South Carolina's offense, struggling as it is, going against one of the elite defenses of the country, is not going to be able to handle it against the Tigers.
Yeah, drunk, raging Cajuns and bad offense don't mesh well on the road.
Next up, KJ, who's in your hot seat this week, which is the player, coach, and or team that has the most to prove going into the weekend?
His name starts with X and ends with R, and he plays tackle for the Auburn Tigers. Listen, if what came out today is true, I hate it for the man. It's unfortunate if he does have hearing issues being Xavier Chaplin. But the fact of the matter is this. If you're talking about hot seat purposes, we got to judge him on what he showed. And even outside of all of the pre-snap penalties, he's been the most holding penalized offensive lineman for the Tigers. So it's not just the pre-snap stuff. Mason Murphy's pretty close, and those two tackles are really the only ones that have been penalized several times this year. And it's just been too much for Xavier Chaplin. And I said it last week about our offensive line coach. I don't even know his name. He must be that irrelevant. And I think it's time for him to go after what happened last week. I don't respect that because what you're doing is you're telling that backup left tackle that's working just as hard in practice in reps that, hey, it doesn't matter how many mistakes the guy ahead of you makes, you're not going to get your chance. After saying that he would bench him, I'm sorry, I just don't have any respect for that. I think he should be on the hot seat, and I think if they have more bad performances, I think the offensive line coach should be fired, and Xavier Chaplin should not start again until he can get this under control. Put him in on some goal line packages if you want. You know, give him some confidence. Try them out there some. You can get players involved. This is what I can't stand about coaching. It doesn't have to be this all or nothing thing. You can get players involved without making them starter. I said Alabama should have done it with Jalen Hurts instead of letting him walk. They wanted Tua on the field, fine. Jalen's an incredible athlete on the ground. Let him catch a screen pass. Let him return kicks and put his head down and have fun. I mean, there's ways to keep guys involved without just completely getting rid of him, but he's not starter worthy, and offensive line coach needs to go on the hot seat this week. Xavier Chaplin and Auburn's offensive line coach.
My hot seat this week is Brian Kelly, Joe Sloan, the offensive coordinator, as well as the entire LSU offense. Having deja vu for LSU this year. Can't run the football. Couldn't run it last year. And last year you had one of the best left tackles in your team's history in Will Campbell, who's now doing great things for the New England Patriots. You had a healthy Garrett Nussmeier. You had a talented Caden Durham. You had receivers out the wazoo. And you still couldn't run the football. And it's the same thing this year. Have a bad offensive line, get it. Your quarterback's dealing with an injury. But when your quarterback's dealing with an injury, you got to help him out at some point. You got to have a running attack to, again, keep a defense honest. It can't just be Garrett Nussmeier drops back 50, 60 times a game and throws the football. You have to have guys like Caden Durham and Caleb Jackson and even Xavier Thomas, who's a receiver, to get the football and get some yards. You have to have something. They're averaging 104.8 rushing yards per game. That's 121st in the country. They ran the ball 22 times for 57 total yards against Ole Miss in their previous matchup. They have 18 plays of 20-plus yards through the first five games, which is 84th in the country. Garrett Nussmeier was 1-for-7 on passes of 20-plus yards against Ole Miss. So you're lacking explosive plays, even though you have two of the most explosive receivers in the country in Aaron Anderson and Berrien Brown Jr., both of which probably run under a 4-3 40 time. And you have a quarterback who was coming in with Heisman hopeful stats and whatnot, and he's logging 259 passing yards per game, which is 46th in the country. The offense hasn't looked great. I think Brian Kelly's at a crossroads right now, especially if you lose this weekend to South Carolina. You have to make the decision, is Joe Sloan the answer at the offense coordinator position? And what I've seen right now, I don't think he is, even with Garrett Nussmeier dealing with an injury, because like I said, he's had 2 years to figure it out, and 2 years in a row, he hasn't been able to run the football.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And you're starting to see maybe something showing in LSU that I think is a problem for Auburn as well. And we talked about it, and that's player developing. It's wonderful to go out and get these recruits. It's wonderful to get them on the sidelines and through spring. But what is the use if you're not going to A, use them, and B, develop them? And Joe Brady was an absolutely outstanding developer of college athletes. And I think given the right circumstances, he could probably do that in the NFL. And how much is him not being there really starting to show for the development of these Tigers? I mean, last year, Will Campbell was – and the offensive tackle taken fourth overall. It was a great selection, and he was definitely worthy. But outside of that, in the last few years, you've seen LSU's first and second round draft pick totals just continue to drop and dwindle down. And yeah, that's not a direct function of, you know, the coach certainly, but it is a direct function of, are the players getting better when they're there? You can play for an average team and leave a better player than you were in high school and in college if you're in the right circumstance and in the right position. And what you're saying, is this LSU offensive staff really putting these players in the right positions and developing at the highest level? I think it could be the same issue with Auburn. You're seeing that, I think, as well being a factor.
Before we take a timeout here, KJ, we have the On the Rise segment where we talk about a player, coach, or team that has shown improvement or come on the scene in the last couple of weeks. Who is your player, coach, or team that has been on the rise?
My On the Rise pick this week is going to be Robert Henry from UTSA. Yeah, I know it's not a great pick, but I mean, this guy has close to 850 total yards of offense this year, and he's doing it against some decent defenses in his conference. I just think it's cool to give somebody else some love. Robert Henry, man, already almost eclipsing quadruple digits for UTSA, the Roadrunners. How about that? Total offense. Nice season for Robert Henry Jr. Also a pretty good campaign put on by Justice Haynes, an honorable mention. The Alabama transfer has looked really good for Michigan and has been their biggest bright spot in some cases.
We talked about this guy earlier, KJ. Dallas Wilson at Florida earned the SEC Freshman of the Week. And it looked like DJ Lagway had missed him all year long. He missed the previous four games with his left foot injury he suffered in training camp. And before that, in the spring showcase, Wilson set a program record with 10 receptions, 195 yards, and two touchdowns in that showcase. So he already showed that he was going to be an elite-level receiver. Comes into this game, finishes with the team highs in six receptions, 111 yards, and two touchdowns. He became the first true freshman wideout in program history to score a touchdown in his debut. And his receptions and receiving yards were both the most by a Gators pass catcher in his first game, and with his 111 yards being the most by any freshman receiver in a game since 2015, that being Antonio Callaway. So it looks like he's already one of the best receivers in recent memory for Gators fans, and he helped DJ Lagway out a lot. You saw a lot more confidence in Lagway, throwing him the ball left and right, and Wilson going out and making plays with the football in his hands. It wasn't Lagway throwing him those touchdowns. A lot of the time, he was making people miss breaking tackles to get those touchdowns and those yardages. And you said, KJ, he looks like a pro. He runs like a pro. And I have no doubt that him and DJ Lagway are going to have a great connection going forward for the Gators.
Yeah, I told you when you told me who you were taking that it was a good pick because I watched the play that he made in week one, but it wasn't just that. I mean, and it wasn't just the incredible catch. He does really have the complete package at the wide receiver position. And quite frankly, I saw a stat the other day talking about Gator receiving and overall grades, and it was saying that there's only been two players that has suited up for the Florida in the 2000s and played wide receiver that have a better overall grade when they've played through of half of a freshman season, those being Antonio Callaway, and you go back to Tim Tebow's main guy, Percy Harvin, Florida legend. I mean, when you're on a list with Antonio Callaway, who didn't have a wonderful NFL career, but had outstanding speed, and you go back to Percy Harvin, who was just an incredible receiver, played in the NFL, won a Super Bowl with the Broncos. You know, it's just really good to see another really good Florida receiver. I know the Gators fans are excited about him, and hopefully they'll be in a better position with not so hard of a schedule next year, and he can showcase it even more.
Another guy I wanted to shout out was Justin Jefferson at Alabama. In the first week of the season, we kind of made fun of him a little bit for being depleted by a tight end. Florida State's Randy Pittman depleted him. And then in this game against Vanderbilt last week, he had 14 total tackles, 9 solo tackles, a tackle for loss, and forced that fumble in the red zone where it looked like Vandy was going to go up two scores earlier in that first half. And for reference for his tackles, Deontay Lawson had the second most tackles on the team with four. Justin Jefferson was all over the field, forcing fumbles, taking away what Dago Pavia wanted, and he had a 0% missed tackle rate against Vanderbilt. That's something you want to look forward to going to play Missouri, who has Ahmad Hardy, who leads the country in forced missed tackles. A guy like Justin Jefferson gives you that type of steady hand at the linebacker position after struggling in the early part of the season. And he was awarded for such with SEC Defensive Player of the Week. Shout out to Justin Jefferson for really turning it around on the defensive side of the football after a really tough week one.